All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' Week 12 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, as we do every day on this podcast, we are giving away I will give you the details, I should say. We're not giving it away, but I'll give you the details on how you can get a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription free of charge at the end of the show. But let's get into this rapid reaction. A pretty solid performance from the Falcons, not necessarily the most consistent, or let's say, they didn't play the most complete game that we wanted to see. Things got a little hairy there towards the end. I think there were definite reasons to that, as opposed to the sort of the classic, the Falcons lack a killer instinct narrative that people have been pushing, you know, basically since the heyday of Mike Smith. I don't think that was really the case. I think there were legit reasons why the Falcons almost blew a 21-point second-half lead to the Buccaneers. And might as well just jump right into it. Let's start with the defensive performance. Yeah, I think that lead is owed to the fact of the injuries in the secondary. You just look at the performance of Ryan Fitzpatrick in the first half of the game. He, you know, had a passer rating of 60, completed only 50% of his passes, and was averaging 3.9 yards per attempt in the first half. And then all of a sudden, in the second half of the game, his passer rating jumps to 94. He's completing 69% of his passes. His yards per attempt is 8.1. And I think a lot of that's owed to the fact that both Desmond Trufant and Brian Poole missed pretty much the entire second half, if I'm not mistaken. With Trufant was out with a concussion and Poole was out with a back injury, if I'm mistaken. I apologize. I didn't look it up. But I think that was the case. And suddenly the Falcons were very thin at the cornerback position with only four guys active. So C.J. Goodwin and Robert Alford were pulling basically double duty. The Falcons were forced to play a lot more three safety looks in the second half of the game. They were forced to put Ricardo Allen quite a bit in the slot, which wasn't a huge stretch for them because Allen has played a significant amount of reps in the slot. It's a relative term when we talk about significant. I would say all of last year, maybe there was maybe 15 times where probably Ricardo Allen played some slot corner for the Falcons, played that little nickel role coming down. I would say probably on average per game, he's playing that role a minimum of about two times a game, two snaps a game, up towards maybe a half dozen. So probably over the course of the first 11 games, you're talking about probably on average about 30 to 40 or so reps playing some nickel cornerback for the Falcons a little bit. And so, you know, that's a relative spike over the course of three quarters of the season compared to last year. And, you know, it wasn't like the Falcons had to, like, bend over backwards to accommodate the cornerback depth. You got guys like KZ, you know, you got everybody's favorite strong safety and Deion Jones. I mean, Keanu Neal also being able to cover. But it sort of stretched the Falcons thin. And as I've talked about many times on this podcast, you know, this defense goes as far as the secondary and the defensive line carries it. Almost every single week we get B+, A-, if not better performance from the secondary, in my opinion. Some weeks we get that same sort of level of production from the defensive line. And usually those happen to be those games where everybody talks about how great the defense performed. And in particularly recent weeks, that's been the case. And so I think once you sort of remove one of those two pieces away from the equation or whatever, formula, whatever, I'm mixing my metaphors. But I think then all of a sudden, then this defense becomes a lot more vulnerable because, as I've said many times as well, that this linebacker group, while decent, isn't necessarily going to make this defense go. You know, this defense is going to rely on this linebacker group to carry them because they're not really capable of playing at that level. But, you know, maybe that'll change in future weeks and or years. But, yeah, so I don't think anybody needs to be like, oh, no, the Falcons lack a killer instinct and blah, 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 blah. It's just, you know, that happens when all of a sudden your cornerback depth gets thin and you're facing two really good wide receivers. You're facing a couple of really good underrated tight ends. O.J. Howard hasn't reached his peak, but we saw some flashes of his ability to make plays, you know, down the seam. Cameron Brate's always been a solid to good tight end. He's, you know, he's by no means Rob Gronkowski or Shannon Sharp, but he's an above average to good NFL starting tight end. And I think that explains the Falcons' sort of second half collapse. So I don't think anybody needs to, you know, freak out about that. You know, on besides that sort of thing with the defense, not a whole lot to say. I think they played well in the first half. Obviously, then they had the letdown in the second half, but they finished the game strong, I thought, with the defensive line sort of stepping up and making the plays that they needed to make, as well as the safeties in particular, sort of making some big plays on that final drive where the Bucs recovered the Terron Ward fumble. Then Brent Grimes returned that fumble close to midfield, and then they sort of were driving down the field and were in scoring position. Ricardo Allen made the big stop on Adam Humphries on third and two. Then you saw Dontari Poe get pressure on fourth and one. Keanu Neal broke up the pass. And you know, I think I don't know if there was, I wasn't paying as much attention to Twitter as I usually do because I was behind in my stream and I didn't want to get spoiled on what was happening upcoming on the play. So if I get some of this information wrong, that explains it. But I don't know if there was a lot of people sort of a controversy over the decision to go for it on fourth down. I think that was the right call for the Bucs in that position at that point in the game, knowing that you need to score a touchdown, at least one touchdown to win the game, and being in that spot on the field, I think you have to go for it on a fourth and one. Kicking a field goal at that point doesn't really help your chances of winning the game. I think going for it, even if you kick the field goal, you still got to score a touchdown on the next series because you're going to be down by 4 points. So, yeah, it was the right play call, or right call. It just fortunately the Falcons' defense was able to overcome, and I think those last two plays are sort of a microcosm of when the secondary steps up and the defensive line steps up. You get positive things. Tack McKinley had a big sack on that same series. And I think Poe had another hit earlier as well. So you saw Grady Jarrett making plays as well, being very disruptive against that soft Bucs front. You know, it was unfortunate for the Bucs. Their offensive line was dealing with a lot of injuries. I think that may have attributed somewhat to the defensive line success, as it should. That's not to take anything away from our defensive line, who has played well, very well, these last couple of games. But certainly when, you know, the opponent is showing its belly a little bit, when you have Ali Marpet, you have, who is it? Pamphile, I don't know how to say his name. And Damar Dotson all nicked up and sort of in and out of the lineup. Caleb Benenach struggled from what I saw. Same thing with Pamphile. Joe Hawley is Joe Hawley. Love that guy to death, but you know he's certainly not a guy that you want trying to block Dontari Poe or Grady Jarrett. You know, and there's only so much J.R. Sweezy can do holding down the fort and beating back the hordes of Falcon pass rushers coming at Ryan Fitzpatrick. So kudos to the defense. Kudos to the defensive line. Kudos to the secondary of sort of surviving that. As far as the cornerback depth goes, maybe this, you know, I know there's going to be people like, oh, we should have, this is why you got to keep Jalen Collins. You know, I can't fault the team. No one would have thought, you know, they would have had three cornerbacks get nicked up the week after cutting Jalen Collins. You know, so they can't be faulted for not being able to predict the future. But certainly, you know, if depending on how the status of Trufant and Poole is this upcoming week, you would expect the Falcons to sign a cornerback. Maybe it's Deji Olatoye. Maybe they promote Deontay Burton, the converted wide receiver from the practice squad. Maybe the new guy, Jeremy Boykins. Maybe it's Jalen Collins. Who knows? But, you know, at least I'll say this, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow episode on our more in-depth recap. But it's just funny to me that, you know, last week, people were like, oh, yeah, the Falcons cut Jalen Collins because he didn't want it and he wasn't working hard and he's a drug addict. And basically, people made up all these reasons to justify the Falcons cutting him. And then now all of a sudden, you're going to see many of those same, not everybody, not all the same people, but many of those same people being like, oh, yeah, you know, they should bring back Jalen Collins. And it's like, wait, but you just said that he doesn't want to play football and he doesn't want to do this and he's a bad egg and the Falcons were justified in cutting him and all these sorts of things. And now you're like, well, they should bring him back. And it's just like, that's the sort of hypocrisy that I just find frustrating when it comes to fans. They just basically, to me, it's just like, you just make up stuff. Whatever is in the moment that sounds right in your head is what you believe is the truth, as opposed to just, you know, having, you know, ethics and morals and I don't know, whatever. Anyway, let's, you know, before we switch gears to the offense, I want to remind you guys, check out all the other NFL shows if you want to get caught up on what's going on around the league. All the other NFL shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, wherever podcasts are found. So let's talk about the offense. I think this was a really strong offensive performance for the Falcons. To me, the thing that obviously jumps out is their explosiveness. You know, they got 20-plus yard plays. That's huge. I think that doesn't quite match the record that Kyle Shanahan had last year with 11 against the 49ers, but it does beat what he had it against the Bucs in that Thursday night game in week 9 when they only had 9 against the Bucs. It always seems like the Bucs are due for one of these monster Julio Jones games every year, if not every year, then every other year, and we got it. This week, Julio finished with 12 catches, 253 yards, and 2 touchdowns. All you people that have been complaining about Julio not getting enough the ball, all you people complaining about Julio not getting enough touchdowns, no more complaining for you, at least this week. You can go back to complaining next week. Not a great performance for the Bucs secondary. It seemed like no matter who they put on him, whether it was Grimes, whether it was Ryan Smith, or whoever else, I'll be curious to look to see what was the Bucs' major malfunction in coverage to struggle this much. Obviously, Julio Jones is Julio Jones, but, you know, 253 yards, like, that's not a normal performance, even for Julio Jones. So it'll be interesting to go back and watch the film and see what the Bucs couldn't do to keep Julio in check there. Obviously the big highlight play was the Sanu pass. You gotta love the Sanu pass. I know that was something Alan, my former co-host, was clamoring for all last year. We finally got it. Sanu throws a better deep ball than Matt Ryan. Sanu, you know, I complain about Sanu's contract quite a bit on this podcast over the last 18 months. I think he's overpaid as a wide receiver, but you know, $32 million is very much underpaying a high level starting quarterback like Mohamed Sanu is. You know, Matt Ryan's next contract might average close to $32 million a year, and they get that same price over the course of 5 seasons, and Sanu is bargain. You're basically getting a top 5 quarterback for basically backup quarterback money. I think Matt Schaub might even be getting more per year than what Sanu is making. So, all jokes aside, though, you know, Sanu, it was funny because I don't think Sam Monson said it on this podcast, but I remember hearing him on another podcast, at least, where when the Falcons signed him, he was being critical of the Falcons paying Sanu all that money. He was basically saying, like, if you put a highlight reel together of Sam Monson, of Mohamed Sanu's best 5 plays, at least three of them would be passes. So we knew he could throw the football, and it was nice to see him finally get that opportunity, and obviously, you know, obviously throwing it to Julio was probably the smartest plan when, you know, it probably beats throwing it to Matt Ryan in an instance. So, also want to give a shout out to Wes Schweitzer. I thought he did a pretty good job against, Gerald McCoy. Gerald McCoy had a pretty quiet game. And I think, you know, I wasn't keen on Schweitzer every play, but every time I was watching him, I thought he did a pretty good job taking care of business against, Gerald McCoy. I thought Teron Ward had a nice redemption moment. You know, he fumbled, as I mentioned earlier, close to the goal line when the Falcons were in a position in the fourth quarter to sort of put the game away, or at least out of reach for the Bucs. And then, you know, the Bucs then returned that close to midfield and then were in position on the drive where they were in position to tie the game at 27 and went for it on fourth down, and the Falcons defense stepped up. But it was nice to see on the next very next season when the Falcons series, when the Falcons were running out the clock, Ward got a critical third and one conversion to really sort of seal the game for the Falcons after the Bucs had used up their last timeout right before the 2 minute warning. And sort of at that point with a new set of downs, with a big run on third and one, a 14 yard gain, that put the Falcons in the red zone, and they were able to sort of cap it off with a beautiful run by Tevin Coleman for a touchdown, his second of the day, and, you know, basically sealed the win. And I'm glad that the Falcons defense stepped up at the end and didn't allow the Bucs to get a backdoor cover, for you, my bookie, enthusiasts. But, yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the, explosiveness. I do want to add a little bit more on that. But before I jump into that, I do want to remind you guys that maybe you're not as locked in on the NFL season. Of course you are. But you also want to be locked in on the NBA season. So you want to be locked in, so stay locked on. You can find out a whole host of NBA shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, wherever podcasts can be found. So let's talk about explosiveness. And I think this deserves a little bit deeper of a conversation, because I'm sure longtime listeners know what I'm going to, or have heard me hint about this stuff. If you've been a longtime reader of FalFans.com, and for whatever various reason, if you're like Steve in Brooklyn and you commit all the things I've written or said to memory, shout out to Steve, then, you know, you know what I'm going to say. But for the rest of you, for the other six of you that listen to this podcast on a regular basis, as opposed to that one guy and Steve, you know, I think I talk about explosiveness and how important it is. And it's for this reason, because many, many years ago, back after the 2013 season, one of the things I watching the film of that 2013 season, and one of the debates and arguments I constantly got in with other fans was, I always talked about how this offense wasn't explosive in 2013, and that was really holding the team back. And I remember getting into arguments with people saying, well, it's because the offensive line is so bad and they don't give Matt Ryan enough time and there's no chance for him to throw the football down the field. And I didn't really buy into that, because I thought the offense, based off of the plays that were called, was more designed to be a dink and dunk offense, and there were opportunities for them to exploit some plays and take some shots down the field. And I don't think the Falcons offense really did that outside of a couple of games, particularly that Buffalo game in that 2013 season. And then after the fact, and that sort of stuck in my mind, and to see the Falcons, that game where the Falcons were able to get a bunch of big plays and take some shots, that was really the first game that good game that Roddy had coming back from his injury. And it was like, to me, it wasn't a coincidence that suddenly the Falcons got some big plays and took some shots downfield, and their offense was clicking better. They scored more points. They were much more efficient on third downs in that particular game than they were pretty much in any other game that season. And so one of the things I did that following offseason was go back and look at sort of this correlation between big plays and offensive success. And one of the things that sort of stood out to me upon doing that research was, when you look at 20 plus yard plays, run and or pass, when teams gain these big plays, or which are these 20 yard plays, at least the Falcons, at least, I haven't done a league wide study, but, you know, just sort of basic observation has seemed to indicate that it applies to all teams, not just the Falcons. But looking back at that 2013 and then that 2012 season, and subsequently looking at going back all the way to 2010 and up to this year, one of the things I discovered is that when you, on possessions, on series where a team gets a 20 plus yard play, the chances of them scoring go up dramatically. And like in some of these seasons, it's been pretty consistently, it goes up like 300%. So you're like three times, at the very minimum, you're three times as more likely to score on a drive that includes a 20 plus yard play than you are not. And sometimes it's like five, six, or seven times as likely. And I think it's one of those things where, like, to me, sort of retroactively trying to explain why this works is I think when you look at it, one of the things about the league is this, is like it's interesting because when you look at teams' ability to convert third downs, the best offenses in the league only really convert third downs about 40 to 48% of the time. So the reality is on any given third down, an offense is at a disadvantage relative to the defense. And so it's much more likely that the team is going to either not convert that third down and then kick a field goal or not convert that third down and then punt the ball. And I think what ends up happening, as many of you are aware, because we talked about this on this podcast, and it's pretty, you know, I don't know if it's football 101, but it's, football 201, that, you know, these long methodical drives just are really hard to string these things together on a consistent basis where you have to convert two or three third downs in order to keep the chains moving. And, you know, again, when you're less likely to convert on these situations than to convert, then stringing together these drives where you have to convert multiple third downs is really, really hard. And I think the value of getting these big plays, particularly these 20-plus yard plays, is that when you look at it on an average yards per play basis, the average NFL offense only gets about 5.5 yards per play. And basically what a 20-yard play then, you know, a simple 20-yard play based off of that number equals about 3.6 plays. And so one 20-yard play is like basically the equivalent of a first, a second, and a third down. And so essentially what I think it does, and at least my reasoning behind why these numbers work in this way, is because basically every 20-yard play is like you're taking away one third down that your offense has to convert on that drive. And all of a sudden, you know, if you can start stringing multiple big plays together, you know, that can be huge for your offense. And then you look at it, it's like the difference between like, and one of the other things I discovered was the chances of you going to the red zone increase significantly as well. So now all of a sudden you're in scoring position as opposed to being forced to punt or whatnot. And once you get in the red zone, then, you know, teams, once you get in the red zone, the chances of you scoring a touchdown, like on average, I think is like 50 to 60%. So again, once you can get that far down the field, the chances of you coming away with a touchdown is better than average. And so I like, this is one of those things that consistently has been the case for the Falcons. And certainly one of the things I'll be looking at this offseason to expand my purview beyond the Falcons and see if this sort of matches up league wide. And I'll also be looking at, you know, one person has suggested to me that maybe I should modify and not just basically only count 20-yard plays, but maybe look at, you know, 15-yard plays or some a lower threshold to see if it is worth it. And that'll be something I'll look at in offseason. But all that preamble is to sort of show, is sort of explain some of these numbers that I'm going to just throw at you right now and to sort of not confirm, but at least to reiterate and reaffirm what my research, past research over the last, you know, 3-4 years has really sort of shown me on a pretty consistent basis. You look at all three of the Falcons' red zone trips, all three of them came on series that included a 20-plus yard play. You look at the two out of nine possessions that the Falcons had where the Falcons did not get a 20-plus yard play in this game, they scored 3 points. That was basically the opening drive and then one drive, I think, either at the start of the fourth quarter or at the end of the third quarter. I can't remember when it was. Yeah, it was in the third quarter. I'm sorry. And so, you know, on average, two drives, 3 points over two drives is 1.5 points per drive. You look at the seven other big play drives that the Falcons had, that included all 31 of their points. That was 4 touchdowns and a field goal. You know, that's 4.4 points per drive. And then if you say Teron Ward doesn't fumble on his series, which also included a big play of 20-plus yards, and, you know, that's another 3 points potentially, if not a full 7, that the Falcons could have added that would have boosted that number to a significant degree. So, again, you're averaging, you know, at least 3 times as many points per drive when you get a big play than you do when you don't. And even when you look at the both Bucks touchdown drives, they also included 20. They were the only two drives that the Bucks got a 20-plus yard play on. You look at their field goal drives, and then you throw in their the last drive that they had, or the penultimate drive where they went for it on fourth down. Those drives included not 20-plus yard plays, but I think one of them had a 19-yard play. I think one of them had a 16-yard play. And then one of them had a 17-yard pass interference call on C.J. Goodwin that netted them 17 yards right there. So that's, again, one of those things where it's like maybe there's a threshold where it's like 15 or 16-yard plays also are showcased, and that's one of those things where I look at it. So it's like one of those things where it's like when you get these chunk yardage, whether it's 15 yards, whether it's 20 yards or whatever, it's really significantly good for your offense because it's just hard to string together 9, 10, 11 play drives where you have to go 75 yards in order to score. And, you know, if you're only averaging 5.5 yards per play, or even if you're averaging 6 yards per play, which is at the upper levels of the league, right, that's basically on average, you got to put together a 12-play drive at the very minimum to score a touchdown. And without a big play, like, you know, you get a 25-yard play, all of a sudden, you know, you just reduced your need to get all of a sudden you go from 12, needing 12 plays to string together a scoring drive to 8. 8 is much more doable than 12. So that's what I wanted to explain to you. That's how I want to wrap this thing up and let you guys know just explosiveness matters. Tomorrow we'll be going a little bit deeper with a Falcon guest. As I said throughout last week when we had the wonky schedule thanks to the Thanksgiving holiday, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled week. Tomorrow we'll be doing a deeper dive into this game, talking maybe some specific players with a fellow Falcons fan, Falcons analyst, Falcons blogger, maybe, as you might refer to that person. And then on Wednesday, we'll do the All-22 review. I do want to go, you know, before I go to in on the Wes Schweitzer thing and why I think he's getting a bad rap by people. He's basically my Ricardo Allen this year, where I think he's getting much worse a rap from a certain vocal group of fans than I think he deserves. But I do want to rewatch the game and certainly want to watch the All-22 before I go talk more in depth about that. But yeah, if you guys missed it, since we had a shortened week, we did our normal Q&A on the website on LockedOnFalcons.com, posted it on Saturday. So go check that out. Since we didn't have an All-22 recap last week, we will have one this week. But if I don't get to your question on Wednesday's episode, if you don't send it in, and this is a reminder that sending those in, and I'll give you the details on how you can send those in a few moments. But if you don't get those questions in, if I don't answer it on that particular podcast, then you can check out LockedOnFalcons.com, where the quote-unquote leftovers will, for any Q&A/mailbag episodes, will be answered. Because you guys know I love hearing myself talk, and in this instance, seeing myself write. So how can you send in those questions? Of course, Twitter is a great way of doing so. My Twitter handle is FalcFans. Just let me know it's podcast related, and I will answer it on the podcast or on a website. The easiest way to do that is not to send it to FalcFans, but it is to the show's Twitter handle at Locked On Falcons. If you hate Twitter character limits and you want to wax poetic about why you think Mohamed Sanu is the best quarterback on the roster and why the Falcons should bench Matt Ryan for him, then by all means, I'm open to hearing that. And you can do so on email with LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, as well as Facebook at LockedOnFalcons is our Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. You can also comment on FalcFans.com as well as LockedOnFalcons.com. So that's it, guys. Standard outro. Let's talk about the Pro Football Focus Edge giveaway. With that is a $40 value. With that, you get player rankings, position rankings, player grades, snap counts, fantasy tools and charts, fantasy projections. I've talked before on this podcast how their season GM feature has really helped me turn around multiple fantasy seasons for me, instead of, you know, now I'm in the playoff hunt in multiple leagues, as opposed to just being in the playoff hunt in one league and putting all my eggs in that one basket. I can owe that to Pro Football Focus, and there are several of their features that you can get with that Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. So you definitely want to get that ahead of your upcoming fantasy playoffs, which start in a couple of weeks for many of you. Maybe some of them are going on now for you because you got weird leagues or something like that, but who knows? And you also get draft coverage as well. And the way that you can win that Pro Football Focus S subscription is you go to Locked On Falcons on iTunes, you give us a 5-star review, you leave your Twitter handle in the review, and then one random winner will be drawn at the end of each week to win that Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. If you are not the person that wins that drawing, then you can still get great Pro Football Focus content on the Locked On Podcast Network. Check out Mike Renner on Locked On NFL with Matt Williamson every Wednesday. Check out Jeff Radcliffe, the director of fantasy for Pro Football Focus, every Thursday on Locked On Fantasy with Benny Iyer. All right, guys. That's it. Good win for the Falcons. You know, I don't feel like I need to spend an hour. You know, it's nice to come on these podcasts and not rant. I'll save my rants for later in the week when I'm complaining to people why, you know, Wes Schweitzer is getting not enough love, or why Keanu Neal is my man crush Monday every single week, and explaining that. But we'll be back tomorrow to talk more Falcons Bucks. We'll keep that train moving, and then we'll pivot towards the dreaded Falcons-Vikings game that we have been talking up quite a bit in recent episodes of this podcast about how big a test that will be. And, of course, because I said that the Falcons will lose that game, or have at least been hinting that I expect them to lose that game, that means that they're going to come out and destroy them. And the way that they've been playing these last couple of weeks, if they continue to play that way, I think they're a very beatable Vikings team. If the offense continues to click and proves to be explosive, because I think explosiveness really makes a huge difference against high-level defenses. And you need those big plays, because certainly a defense like the Vikings isn't going to necessarily give up too many third downs, which has been something that the Falcons have really sort of rested their hat on the last couple of games. But I loved seeing that the fact that they were not only really efficient on third downs this week, but they were also very explosive at getting those chunk yardage. So cue the Dr. Dre beat, explosive. Love the Nate Dogg verse. I listen to it probably at least once a month. So check that out. For obvious reasons, I can't put that on this podcast. But if I could, I would, my friends. So go listen to that on YouTube or Apple Music or Google Play Music or whatever. Whatever. Spotify, whatever you're subscribed to, go check it out. There you go, guys. That's it. I don't got anything else to say. Peace out. Stay locked on. Rise up, brothers.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.